Back at you, 3D. Darren and Derek. Willie will join us next week. We're here at SEC Media Day here in Hoover, Alabama, at the wonderful Winfrey Hotel. It was great. Thank you, Rachel Balboa, for coming on and gracing us with your presence, talking about LSU and Ed Orgeron and you know, other teams. And I think we all are trying to figure out what's the deal with the East and the wide gap between the SEC East and the SEC West, because like you said, it's clear, Darren, they all recruit the same players. They all recruit the same landscape. They all have wonderful facilities. But it seems like one team fares better than the others, and that's Alabama. And it's not like, you know, Nick has some special formula, you know, that he's sprinkling over these recruits, you know?
The East has the facilities. The East has the support.
Uh-huh.
But for whatever reason, the East has not been relevant in winning SEC crowns. Last one to do it was Florida. Seems like a long time ago.
Yeah.
Bill Bender from Sporting News has been nice enough to pop by our table here in the fourth and final hour of 3D. Bill, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I can't follow up Rachel, guys, so I'm going to have to try. She does a wonderful job.
I mean, she came up with this Darius Geis story, a Leonard Fournette story, playing offensive line in Pee Wee football. I mean, she was digging deep with some good stories.
See, that's what I said, like the standard. But I can't. What I can do is help you guys talk about this gap between Alabama and the powers that be in the SEC East. And this feeling, I'm just doing some stat work up there. You mentioned Florida winning the last crown for the SEC East. Alabama has won 18 straight games against Florida, Tennessee, and Georgia.
Oh, wow.
It's unbelievable. So what is it? I mean, you look at programs like Georgia and Florida and Tennessee. I mean, even South Carolina and Kentucky, but people, look, they get support. I mean, people show up. They have the facilities. Why is the East, why has the West been so superior over the East?
It's almost in some ways a mental thing, because I think each one of those schools we mentioned, whether it's, I can remember a Florida-Alabama game where Alabama came in and led, I think it was 30-0 at halftime, and their players are holding their helmets up in the swamp. It's happened to Georgia twice, whether it was the blackout game or Mark Richt's final season. And it happened last year with Tennessee. I was at that game where Alabama just...
That was
I
bad.
Mean, 10 plays
yeah, it
in.
Wasn't, yeah.
10 plays in, I'm like, oh, I know what I'm writing tonight. It's going to get
that
brutal.
That was coming off an off week.
Right. And, I mean, it's just a team that has so much depth for recruiting. So many guys that are, it seems like when you watch the NFL draft each year, it's this class goes, but then the next class right behind them, those guys show up. So like Kirby Smart said this morning, it comes through, it seems like a simple answer, recruiting and development, but nobody's doing it better than Alabama right now.
Let me ask this about the coaches, Bill. Derek Mason, who comes on with us every week during the course of the season, not this Derek Mason, the other Derek Mason on West End. It was rough early on, and we were rooting for him because it was very clear. He's such a likable guy to cover and to be around. But early on, it was like, you know, he's never been a head coach before, and he had to learn. And it's obviously looks a whole lot different now, today, than it did back in year one. Kind of like what we were talking about with Kyle Shermer earlier today on the show. Just the first half of last season to the second half looked like a totally different quarterback. Who, Bill Bender at Sporting News, is, do you feel like has grown up or grown into the role? You've got Kirby Smart, never been a head coach, now going into year two. Ed Orgeron in stop two, his second chance at being a head coach. All those guys that fit that category, who do you think maybe has the best shot of growing into what we expect out of a head coach? I guess Jim McElwain really doesn't fall in that category because he's been a head coach, and it's carried over, and he's had success now in the SEC. So maybe the guys that there's uncertainty with, who do you think best fits that bill?
Well, I think McElwain was my initial answer, but if we're DQing him, I'd probably go with Kirby Smart because of the recruiting. You saw that with their class last year. Georgia, obviously, the high school talent is substantial in that state. You've got to win battles in state. And the good news for them is they had Nick Chubb come back. They had Sonny come back. They had Roquan Smith come back. So he's got a lot to work with, but that's not the in-game part. And with college football coaches, we ranked them last week. It's a combination of recruiting, X's and O's, being the CEO. And I think you mentioned Derek Mason. He falls, as Derek would know, a guy like Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern, who I deal with in the Big Ten, a guy that's an excellent coach, but Northwestern doesn't have what Ohio State has and what Michigan has and what Michigan State and Penn State have. And that's, it's hard to grade those coaches when you know that's what they're up against.
Yeah, because when you look at Coach Mason and what he has been able to do, like we said, that first year or two was a struggle for him. But then he kind of learned, and he will probably tell you this, it was job training for him. Being a head coach, he had to learn how to be a head coach. And obviously, last year was much better for him because they got an opportunity to play in the bowl game. How do you think now that he has gotten that experience, now that he has played in some big games, beat a Georgia, beat a UT, was close in some other games, how do you think they fare this year? In his third, fourth season.
Well, there's an opportunity there because the SEC East to me is a bunch of this team has this, but, and there's a lot of there's probably a but for every team in the conference. I would say you could say that about Florida. You could say that about Georgia. So the opportunity for them, I think the next step would be working into third place, fourth place, trying to get up there. And to do that, they're going to, I'm glad you guys talked about Kyle Shurmur because to me, is he a quarterback that not only can play well and be fit in the system and all those kind of things, but can he elevate the program? When you're a Vanderbilt, you need a quarterback who can elevate the program, not just be a guy. He's got to go out and win those games against Tennessee, make it a fight against Georgia. Can't lose to Kentucky, Missouri, and who am I leaving out? Kentucky, South Carolina. They have to win those games if they want to do that. And if Kyle Shurmur takes those next steps, they'll have a chance.
Now, can he potentially be the best quarterback? And I know we have some good quarterbacks in the East, some guys that are not quite proven, but you see, whether it's Georgia, Missouri, you see guys that can get the job done. Florida in that situation as well. But if Kyle Shurmur continues to develop and continues to play the way he did that second half of the season, minus the bowl game, can he be not just the best quarterback in the East, but one of the best overall?
Well, I mean, that's what the SEC has this year is very good potential quarterback depth. And I say that because Jacob Eason was inconsistent last year. I don't know how good he'll be. Florida, I like Felipe Franks, even though Zaire transferred in. I think Franks could be very good. Patterson, Bentley, these are all guys that maybe they're breakout stars. So that's why I'm saying with Shurmur, he's been through it, been to a bowl game, has to take that next step because – for a conference that we always talk about the defense, I think the narrative this year really is going to be the quarterback play because there are enough good ones. And, of course, I didn't even get to Jalen Hurts, who I think is the best bet for the Heisman as a quarterback in the SEC because of the setup around him.
Now, if Jarrett Stidham, newly transferred to Auburn, if he's everything that they think he could be, what he showed at Baylor, do they upstage Alabama and win the West?
The Iron Bowl will be the biggest game of the year if all those things are true. And that's bigger than Ohio State, Michigan, than Washington, USC, Clemson, Florida State. The Iron Bowl will be the biggest college football game of the season because that means Auburn will have something for them. Mm-hmm. They haven't had that. They haven't – since the kick six, Alabama's basically run them into the ground. I think the 1 year Derrick Henry had 48 or 50 carries or something. Now – if Stidham comes in, they have the running game. If he can stretch the field with a vertical passing game, get those 20-yard chunk plays, and they can score and make Alabama's defense uncomfortable, then we got a ball game. I talked to Darren about this a little bit last night. I like everybody else, we predicted Alabama, USC, Ohio State, Florida State. I hope I'm wrong. Because if I'm right, that means the season will have absolutely no drama for
us.
It'll feel like the NBA season.
Yeah.
Which I don't want.
No. We're at SEC Media Days. I get it. We're in the belly of this 4 days of SEC, SEC, SEC. Of the Power Five, just sitting here today in July, Bill, how would you rank the five Power Five conferences? How would you go one through five the way you think it's going to play out the season and who's going to be the strongest, who's going to be the weakest conference?
I think I'll go backwards. So I think fifth is still the Big 12 because there's not enough depth in that conference, and I don't know what Oklahoma and Texas have. And fourth would be the Pac-12. USC, Washington's probably what they want. I know the ACC had a big year. I'd probably put them three. It's because I think Clemson doesn't have Deshaun Watson. Florida State has a ton of talent. Big Ten to me is still, it's like 1A, 1B with the SEC because the Big Ten East is, to me right now, the best division in college football. If Indiana's good, if Michigan State bounces back, because I think no other division has three schools right now, Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State, that you could make a strong playoff case right now. And if Michigan State turns around what happened last year, then you have four legit playoff contenders. I don't think any other division in college football can say that right now, that they have four teams that you could have in the playoff.
So did you have Big Ten one?
I'd say 1B, though, because the bottom half of the SEC is better than the bottom half of the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. Like Rutgers and you know, Maryland's making some steps, but the Purdue's and the Illinois, the bottom of the SEC is better than that. But I think the thing when you look at the college football playoff picture, most of the power in college football doesn't it's not about the conferences. It's about the SEC West, the Big Ten East, and the ACC Atlantic, which has Florida State, Clemson, Louisville, and NC State, whatever. I mean, that's a reach. But so I think 8 to 9 playoff contenders are just in those three divisions alone.
The top two games in your mind in week one is what?
Well, I mean, Alabama, Florida State.
Florida State's got to be one. Okay, let's take them out.
So two more?
Timmy, two more.
Florida, Michigan, because the momentum both teams can create. No, a lot of people have questions about Michigan and what they lost, but they've got a lot of depth coming back. I mean, they've got Rashawn Gary. They've got their quarterback back. And Florida, the same thing. I think the winner of that game gets a ton of momentum. The other one would probably either be Tennessee, Georgia Tech, or West Virginia, Virginia Tech, because to me, I mean, having Tennessee and Georgia Tech down in Mercedes-Benz Stadium, again, big momentum. What if Tennessee loses?
We've already talked about
I'm sure
it's
you guys,
interesting that you brought that up. Like, what if they lose?
And the same thing for Alabama. If like, what if Alabama loses?
I don't think that game has near the impact that, like, let's say if Tennessee loses. Because Alabama, Florida State, I don't want to say the loser gets a pass, but your season's not over.
As long as you don't get drilled.
Because both are still going to be favorites to win their conference. So their season is not over. Tennessee loses to Georgia Tech. You know what that means that whole week after that game.
Well, yeah, and the thing about the ACC that's real interesting is Florida State plays Alabama and Miami in the first 3 weeks. Clemson plays Auburn and Louisville in the first. The ACC picture is going to be very clear by September 16th, which is crazy to say. But to your point about Tennessee, if they lose, given I read Twitter like everybody else. Mm-hmm. I know what Butch Jones is up against, and we were talking about it yesterday. He brings out the cliches like nobody else, but the negative vibes, if they lose that game, will be out of control.
It'll be an avalanche.
Maybe too much to overcome in some ways.
You do wonder. That's why I think that game, I'm glad you brought that up. I do think that game is critical for them because it's critical as in it's a first game of the season is a must win, but because of what we just said, it really is a must win.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They can't afford to lose that game because of what happens afterwards.
And as you know, Darren, week one, we overreact more than anything else.
Yeah.
And it's just in the NFL, in high school, college, my kids' peewee league, everything, we overreact to that first game. But with schools like Tennessee, you just can't. And it's all by itself on Labor Day, too. It's all by itself on that Monday night and when everybody's
– A lot of eyes will be on it.
Yeah. So if you're in that Thursday spot, the primetime spot, or Labor Day by yourself, it's kind of like Ole Miss, Florida State last year. Ole Miss lost and – season didn't go according to plan.
Good to see you, Bill. Thanks for doing this.
Absolutely, guys. Thank you so much.
Bill Bender, Sporting News. Appreciate him stopping by the table. More of 3D. We continue our coverage here from SEC Media Days.
Thanks,
next.
Bill.
The bottom of the hour, we'll talk a little Gator football. Florida, of course, part of day two, SEC Media Day coverage. Georgia, Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, and Florida. Frank Frangie Will stopped by in Jacksonville. Of course, he's with Gridiron now, and Jags voice, 1010XL. So we'll talk to him a little bit about Florida and some other things in the East. Derek, we must tell someone congratulations.
And who is that?
I am reading the Buffalo Broadcasters Association. Today, they have announced their 2017 Hall of Fame inductees.
Oh, is it someone we may know?
There's a name on there that we do indeed know. Care to guess who?
I'm just going to go out on a limb and say, not Floyd because he's sitting here, but
Floyd is not in the Buffalo Hall of Fame.
Pete Weber.
Pete, well, did you cheat?
Weber.
Did you cheat?
Well, you got it right in my face right here.
You did. The answer is yes. You cheated. You are a cheater, Derek. It is not Floyd Reese. It is Pete Weber. So congratulations, Pete Weber, who is going to be inducted into the Buffalo Broadcasters Hall of Fame. Well, how many Hall of Fames is he in?
I mean, Pete's been doing this a long time.
Man, he is in, like, every freaking Hall of Fame there is.
Buffalo Hall of Fame, this Hall of Fame, that Hall of Fame. Do they give jackets for each Hall of Fame?
If he has quite the jacket collection.
He has a closet full of sport coats.
Let me just tell you, if they do give out jackets of these for being inducted into these Broadcaster Hall of Fames, he has missed the boat because he doesn't wear them. And you know me.
Yeah.
I'm wearing them. I'm sleeping in them.
Yeah, you.
I would be on Radio Row going,
you've made it known.
Have I shown you my Hall of Fame sport coat?
Yeah, you've made it known that if you were to get in the Hall of Fame, any Hall of Fame.
Flaunted.
Yeah, and they gave away jackets.
If you have it,
yeah.
I'm wearing it.
You'll wear it.
There's no reason to keep that puppy hidden at home. Why?
What if they gave you like a yellow? I mean, not a yellow. Let's say a sky blue.
That's the point.
Jacket.
If you get inducted into Canton, they give you a gold jacket.
Yeah.
Well, what is the gold jacket meant to do? What, hang
be
in
worn.
Your man cave in an encased?
Yeah.
Do you want it encased in your man cave? Or do you want it sitting in the closet on a hanger? Or do you want to wear it? I thought that was the point, to sizing you up, having you give your speech, or putting it on you on the stage after your speech. What's the point if you're not going to wear it?
Yeah, so, Pete, if they give you a jacket, please just wear it for Darren.
Well, if he doesn't want to wear it.
You'll take it, huh?
I'm just saying, if that was me, I would do it. No, I'm not going to wear his. Hey, congratulations, Darren. That's Pete Weber's. Like that's kind of a weird story.
Walking around with your hand on your chest all day.
Hey, congrats, man.
Are you?
Congrats, Buffalo Hall of Fame. Good for you.
Never knew you worked in Buffalo.
Yeah, but I haven't. It's Pete Weber's coat. Awkward. No, I'm not going to do that.
Goodness.
But I would wear one.
Yeah.
So congratulations, Pete Weber.
Congrats, Pete.
Again.
Another Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame. Is it boring now? Pete Weber and it's another Hall of Fame.
Well, it's not boring for Pete.
Huh?
It's not boring for Pete. He loves it.
Floyd's over here laughing. I don't know what he's probably laughing at us. Not with us. I'm sure he's laughing at us. Are you in any Hall of Fames?
UCLA's Hall of Fame?
UCLA?
Yeah, he's in UCLA Hall of Fame. Yeah.
So
do they give you a gold jacket because of the UCLA colors?
UCLA Hall of Fame.
So not only did he say he's in the Hall of Fame, but he said, if you're an All-American.
Look, I'm in the Hall of Fame, but it's only because I was an All-American. I mean, gosh,
goodness.
You guys asked. I mean, why don't you wear your coat? Did you get a coat? Nothing? A plaque.
Yeah,
okay.
I'd
have
plaque.
That puppy in the studio with me. I'd have it right in front of Jared every day. I'd make him stare at it for 4 hours every day.
Oh,
you
my
see
goodness.
That, Jared? UCLA All-American Hall of Fame. That's what I would do.
Then Jared says Lonzo Ball.
Big ballers, Floyd.
Can't beat it. Can't beat it whatsoever.
So congratulations to Pete Weber. Derek Mason, earlier today, talked about their football program being on the rise.
Vanderbilt football is on the rise. As I look at our program and where we're at and what we've done, I thought in 2016 we took several steps forward to be a better program. You looked at how we finished the season, 4-2, got us to a bowl game for the first time in my tenure, and that was an exciting time for us. Definitely not satisfied. This group is definitely moving forward, and I talk to our guys about it all the time. It's about the work. It's a daily process, and to make sure that we can work hard to achieve, push ourselves in the right direction to become Vanderbilt men.
Vanderbilt men.
We were not upstairs. He was obviously talking while we were down here doing the show. But from what I can tell, just reading on Twitter,
he's confident.
I mean, we know. We talk to Derek Mason all the time. But, I mean, you're right. I mean, it seems like he was just boiling over, exuding confidence today. And people were eating it up. I mean, the comments I was reading.
Because he's a likable guy.
As Derek Mason was bringing it today at SEC Media Days. And by the way, did you see his dress attire?
He
didn't have a vest on.
Man, he's looking good.
He did. He brought it. Kyle Shermer told us. He said Vanderbilt was the best dressed.
Yeah. I mean, from Ralph Webb to Kyle Shermer, he looked good as well. Then your head coach. I think it starts at the top, and then it kind of trickles down. As Floyd knows, everything starts at the top, and it kind of trickles down. So, but he has every reason to feel confident in his ball club, because they have a returning starter at quarterback who showed, as we said, second half of the season, that he is a quarterback. You have a guy that many people are sleeping on, but he's a top three back in the SEC. He's just, I mean, you can't discredit what Ralph Webb has been able to do at Vanderbilt University. They're going to have a good defense. So he has every reason. They're recruiting well. He has every reason to feel confident as a head coach. More time than any. He's been there on West End. So, you know, but he understands that, listen, you know, I'm confident in what my team can do, but ultimately, you know, we have to show that we can win ball games. And I think beating UT at the end of the season, beating Georgia, that gave them confidence. So, yeah, they didn't play well in the bowl game, but, you know, those wins they had during the season, you know, confident team. So, I don't blame them. You might as well.
Our coverage here at SEC Media Days, sponsored by Pepper Boxing, Volunteer Hose and Gasket, and our transportation provided by Walker Chevrolet. When we come back, Frank Frangi from Jacksonville. We'll talk to him next. He'll sit down at our table. You're listening to 3D, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Back here on 3D, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Darren McFarland and Derek Mason with you. Close to wrapping up a day two coverage. Remember, we keep giving you coverage here on 102.5, The Game, from 6 in the morning until 6 in the evening. All that brought to you by Pepper Boxing, Volunteer Hose and Gasket, and transportation provided by Walker Chevrolet. Frank Frangi has been nice enough to stop by Gridiron Now. 1010 XL down in Jacksonville. Frank, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you guys for having me. It's a fun weekend. It's crazy, though, isn't it?
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
It's a crazy. You guys come every – how many years now have you been? Do you come most time?
This is year three for us.
I've been down here 14, 15 years.
So you get a taste of the craziness of this week, huh?
I was telling Derek there was, I think, two tables for Radio Row when I first started coming. Now they're out in the mall.
I'll tell you a story. The first year they had it was in 1985. The first year they did radio here was 89. I was here.
Really?
That's how old I am, okay? Oh, that's how you know you're old, right? I did it. I think I missed 1 year ever since, but since then, been coming the whole time.
Greg Sankey stopped by our show a couple hours ago, SEC commissioner, and Derek asked him about moving this thing around. Look, it's no secret. Hoover's nice, but this thing has outgrown Hoover, right, in our opinion. I think listening to his answer, I think he feels that way too, not willing to divulge their plans. But he admitted that they are certainly thinking about that. Do you think it's time for this thing to get moved around? Obviously, we're biased. We think maybe it should stop in Nashville.
Yeah.
But Jacksonville, Nashville, Atlanta, you think this thing should move around?
Darren, I do. I think it absolutely should move around. Number one, nobody now passes up an opportunity for media, right, for TV. And so now it's an opportunity to engage more fans. It used to really be a media event where the media would show up and interview the players.
Exactly.
Well, it's way more than that now. It's the SEC networks here, and ESPN's doing live SportsCenter hits here, and it's a chance to engage fans. The fans are all lined up. Where do you see Saban come through here tomorrow?
Okay. Yeah.
It'll be crazy. So I think it should. I've always believed before that it shouldn't move around, but that it shouldn't be here. It should be in Atlanta. There's, 1,200 members of the media? Everybody can get to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Everything's direct to Atlanta. It's hard to get here. That's the problem. They've done a nice job here, and I know they used to have it here because the SEC office is here, and they wanted to carry the press guides. Mm-hmm. Well, there's no press guides anymore. Everything's online. So now I've always thought it should move to Atlanta and be there every year. But I hear you. What's a better place than Nashville? I call the Jaguars game, so don't tell my Jaguar buddies I'm saying that. What's a more beautiful town than Nashville? What's a more fun town than Nashville? I mean, that should be the next place it goes. And we'd love to have it in Jacksonville. Atlanta, I still think, is a great stop for it. Someone said it may go to Dallas. Yes, I would move it around, but first things first, I'd move it to Atlanta all the time. That would be the home base if it was me.
Why do you think, Frank, that Jim McElwain has been at Florida 2 years? This is going into his third season. And nobody has picked the Gators to win the East, and yet they just keep winning the division. Last year was all Tennessee.
Right.
It was Georgia before. It's probably going to be back to Georgia this year. That would be my assumption. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, number one, I think Georgia will get the vote, but I think it'll be close. I think Florida will be close, but I think Georgia will get the vote because they win ugly. They're not. They win. They don't have any offense. They haven't been in the top 100. Florida hasn't been in the top 100 in offense nationally in 4 years.
Wow.
Top 100. There's only 128 teams, and they haven't been in the top 100 in 4 years. They win ugly. They're kind of clunky. Alabama beats them by 100 every championship game. I think because of the ugly nature of how they win, people don't expect them to. Last year, I loved that Tennessee team last year. I'm surprised. Butch Jones said yesterday he didn't think it was a disappointment. Well, it should have been, because that was a disappointing season for a team that was really talented, had a lot of veteran leadership. So I think Florida wins ugly. Other teams have been, it's their year. Tennessee last year was their year. The year before Georgia was supposed to be their year. So combine those two things. By the way, I think Florida's going to win the division again. I think Florida's got a really good team. I think they've got to figure out quarterback. Mm-hmm. But other than quarterback, they've got a really good team.
It's like you should do radio. You kind of led me to my next question. It's like you know what's going on here. So what do you think? There's a lot of speculation. Nobody truly knows. It's kind of like the Tennessee situation. Who do you think they think behind closed doors is their guy?
You know, they haven't seen Malik Zaire practice yet. So it's hard to think, if you're a coach, that he's our starter when you haven't seen him practice. It's almost like signing a true freshman. You know he's going to be good, but until you see him on the field, you don't really know. But I think if you held a gun to their head, they'd say, we think and hope he wins the job to start the season. I really think both he and Felipe Franks are both going to play. Felipe Franks is a 6'6", 225-pound NFL-looking drop-back passer. Ultimately, that's what Jim McElwain wants. He's not his own read guy. He's a drop-back passing guy. That's what he wants.
Right.
But for the here and now, Zaire is a really bright guy. I mean, here's a guy that got accepted into Harvard grad school. Here's a guy that the president of Notre Dame wrote a recommendation letter academically for any school that wants to take him. So he's such a bright guy that he can pick up the offense very quickly. He's a good athlete. So I think Jim wants to play both of them, and I think you'll see both guys.
All things that have never happened to me, so the way you described him. It will never happen. So you think that Michigan game, you'll see both guys on the field?
I do. I think Zaire probably wins the job. He's been in the big setting before. He played in that Texas game last year that was a nationally televised game and the whole nation watched. So I think Zaire will start the game. I think you'll see both guys a lot. I don't sense a wire-to-wire situation. Remember, Zaire just got cleared. He's just meeting his teammates. Doesn't even know him yet. I mean, we're in July. And he's just meeting those guys. So, Derek, you can speak to that. It takes a while.
Exactly.
To get to know your teammates. What are your tendencies? You're an offensive line blocking for the guy. They have no idea what his tendencies. They haven't even practiced with him. So, I think you're going to see both guys.
We kind of feel like on this show, Frank, that the East is kind of like you keep asking the really, really, really hot or cute girls to go to the dance. You keep getting turned down. And then there's another group of girls that you have interest in, but you'd like to start here, and you eventually end up over in this corner. And
right.
Hey, will you go to the dance with me? It feels like that's the way the East is being treated right now. It's just like, you want to go to the SEC championship game? Why can't the East compete at the same level that the West has been competing
at? You took me back to my junior high days. I remember that too well. I think it's cyclical. I really do think it. I can tell you, and you know this, in the 90s, in the mid-2000s, the East dominated. When Florida and Tennessee were the only two good teams in the league. Mm-hmm. Alabama was no good. LSU and Auburn were okay. And the East dominated. The East won 7 out of 10 titles, I think, in the 90s, something like that. So I think it tends to be cyclical. What's happened is when Florida went down, everything changed because they were the king. Florida was the king of the East. Alabama was the king of the West. And both those teams had to lift their divisions. When Florida went in the tank after the Tebow years, that changed everything. It also coincided with Tennessee going in the tank. Do you realize Tennessee last year is the first time they had a winning season in the SEC in 10 years? Tennessee, a winning season in the conference, hadn't had one in 10 years. How can that be? I mean, all the resources Tennessee has. So Tennessee went down and Florida went down about the same time. And there's not a lot of depth in it. When the West has depth, LSU, Auburn, Arkansas, Texas A&M all have the chance to be good programs, right? Mm-hmm. They have a chance. Alabama, Arkansas, LSU, and A&M can be great programs. Florida doesn't have as many the East doesn't have as many with possibilities.
Now, we talked about Florida and the strength of their team typically has been their defense. You alluded to them not finishing in the top 100 in total offense in the last 4 or 5 years. But they do. The one thing they do have is a bunch of returning starters on his team. More importantly, the offensive line. I think they have four of the returning five back, and then Callaway's back, a dynamic receiver. So, Kate, do you see this, regardless of, I guess, who they put underneath center, because they do have potential at that position? This will be a much better offense because of the guys they have coming back.
You would think, Derek, you're right. It would be the time, wouldn't it? Because he loves his offensive line. He said it earlier. I met with him a few minutes ago, and he talked about his offensive line. He's going to talk about it in the big room coming up. He said, for the first time, we have an offensive line that's a strength. He said, I don't want to jinx him. I probably shouldn't be saying it, but I think for the first time, we have an offensive line that's a strength. I love the running backs. Scarlett's the best one, but Thompson, Piran, they've got good running backs. And you're right, Callaway heads up a really good core. They've got good players on offense. Two concerns. One, quarterback. We talked about that. The other is, if you haven't done it, you know, if you're a golfer and you think you're really good but you've never broken par, until you break par, it's hard as hell to do it.
Yeah.
And I think they're that a little bit, Derek. I think they've got a chance to be very good. For all the reasons you said, they've got a lot of good players. But until you do it, that's why that Michigan game is so important. They got to play well in that game. Tennessee early in the year, they got to play well. If that offense hits stride, then they're going to – I'm telling you, I think they've got a really good team. I think top to bottom, offensive defense, they've probably the best kicker in the country. They may have the best punter in the country. Their defense, they've replenished. So even though they lost some guys, if they can figure out quarterback, they're going to have a really good team.
So they have the potential, with that being said, that if everything – because of the talent that they have, if everything comes together just right, not only – do they put themselves in a position to win the East? But if they do indeed play Alabama or LSU or Auburn in the SEC championship, it won't be as it has been the last couple of years.
That's right. I don't know if they're going to beat Alabama, but I don't think it's 52-10 this
year. Exactly.
That's exactly, and that's the difference. Look, they're building it. It's only his third year. He won the East, like you said, during the first 2 years. He obviously is pretty good. So we'll see what happens.
It'll be interesting. They're two out of their first three games, Michigan, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's right.
So they'll have a good gauge. Flipping over on the NFL side, Jags, where are they? Because for the first time in a long time in Nashville, since when Derek was playing for the Titans, there's like real enthusiasm.
I mean,
it's been a while. They haven't been in a playoff game since 2008. But there's real, you know, positive feedback right now and enthusiasm for this upcoming season. Where are they right now in Jacksonville?
It's funny. I have been the play-by-play voice of the team for 3 years now.
They've won 12 games, okay? So I feel it, all right? Okay, I feel it. All right, I get it. All right, they think they're better, but it's a very tepid optimism. It's very guarded because they've been there before. Mm-hmm. Think they're better and they're not. Think they're better and they're not. They've got a lot of good defensive players. They've done a nice job of rebuilding that defense. Jalen Ramsey, the cornerback who had the big game against Tennessee toward the end of the season last year, is a really good player.
Nashville kid.
Yeah, that's right. And he's really a good player. So they believe now they've got good players on defense. Mm-hmm. Offense, we'll see. I'm not sold on it yet, although they drafted Leonard Fournette, who I think can be such a star in the league. It all comes down to the quarterback. It really does. If Blake Bortles becomes what they think he can be, they're going to, in time, have a good team. Is it this year? Is it next year? They're going to certainly become a better team. But it all comes down to the quarterback. I will tell you, and I've said this on Jacksonville Radio, I really like the Titans. I think the Titans now, if Mariota is everything I think he is, whoo, boy, they're going to be good. I think they've really built that thing. I think Mike Mularkey's a better coach than sometimes people in our city have given him credit for being. So I think so. But I like what the Jags are doing. I think Coughlin's the right guy. I think they've got the right system. It's a good group. I tell you what, traveling with them, being around them, it's really a good group. I hope they have success because they've worked hard at it.
Well, Pro Football Focus got our attention when they ranked 1 through 32, the NFL rosters.
Yeah.
Putting the, you know, compiling the data of the guys who have played, even if they're coming over from another team. They had the Titans as the third best roster in the NFL. The Texans were 21. The Jags were 24. Indianapolis, 26.
Yeah. I saw that, too. We talked about it on our air. I don't know that I think the Titans have the third best roster, but I bet you they have a top 10 roster. Mm-hmm. Of the 32 teams, and I would probably have the Jags 20 in the 20s, probably higher than PFF has them, but I saw it. But the bottom line is whether the Titans have the third best roster or the 11th best roster, obviously they're a much improved team. I don't think anybody would debate that.
So, Frank, you are sandwiched in between Floyd Reese, the former Titans GM, and Derek Mason, the former Titans wide receiver.
Right.
Back in the day, we all remember who were covering it, Titans and Jags. That was quite the rivalry. I mean, back then. Can they ever recreate that? Are they both headed in that direction?
Well, Derek caught 7 trillion passes against Jacksonville, so I promise you, I believe all. I remember all 7 trillion. Okay?
He would tell you you're wrong. It's 8 trillion.
Yeah, I'm telling you, he caught 7 trillion passes against the Jaguars. All he did is catch passes against Jacksonville. I think so. I really like where Tennessee's headed. They both have the same plan. Be good on defense. Run the football. Be tough. They're trying to build it the same way. I really like Mariota. I hope Bortles can be that. So, yes, I think they can. I think it's all cyclical. And I think the Titans are closer. But I think the Titans and Jags can be that again. And I don't just say that. I really believe it. I think it'd be a lot of fun for all of us.
Frank, good to see you. Thanks
Thank
for
you
doing
guys
this.
For having me. It's been a blast. Take care.
All right. Frank Frangie at Gridiron Now. Appreciate him stopping by. 1010XL, as you just heard, Jags voice there in Jacksonville. And we do appreciate him stopping by. We'll come back in. You want us to wrap it up, Joel, or what do you want us to do there?
Yeah, let's just hang out till Jared and the GM
All right,
get
let's
here.
Just hang out. We'll take it to Jared and the GM.
Okay, this is what I want to get to quickly before then. And we talked about this earlier in the show, and we just hadn't been able to because of our guests and everything else. And we appreciate every guest that have come on because the show has been terrific. The comparison,
Jalen Hurts and Russell Wilson.
Russell Wilson.
I want to hear this.
This is why, because if you watch Jalen Hurts, watch his movement, watch the way he commands the offense. He doesn't take many chances. The way he reminds me so much of Russell Wilson. Russell does a good job at playing within the confines of their offense. But if he needs to make a play with his legs or extend the play, he's able to do it. To me, they're both around, and maybe Hurts is a little bit taller, but they both have the same build. Both seem to have the same mechanics as far as throwing the football, as far as how they view the game of football. I watched Russell Wilson his last season at Wisconsin, and what he was able to do in 1 year going from NC State to Wisconsin showed me that he was going to be a good NFL quarterback because he had less than a year, less than 3 or 4 months to pick up an offense. And he led his team to a conference championship. I think they won a conference championship that year. I believe either they won or he lost to Michigan State. But that in itself, and then you watch Jalen Hurts, and you watch what he's able to do. You watch how he commands the huddle. Even though I know Nick Saban and that brass didn't give him a lot, but if you just watch how he matured over the season, it's the same kind of path that I believe Russell Wilson took in not just at Wisconsin, before that North Carolina State, but then his years in the NFL, his short career thus far at the NFL level. He's done exactly what the offense has wanted him to do, but he's able to go far beyond. You can see that each year they're going to start throwing more and more and more. Obviously, the contract, he's won the Super Bowl, but he is now the face. They let him go out there and control the offense, and I think that's what Jalen Hurts will get to a point in year three or four where Nick says, okay, here it is. It's your offense. I'm a controller defense. I trust this kid enough to not, you know, hover over him all the time when he's out there at quarterback. Just let him play. He understands what's going on. Smart kid. And he just reminds me so much from a mental standpoint and his mechanics somewhat of a Russell Wilson.
So with that being said, if you're going to compare him to somebody like Russell Wilson, do you think, and I don't know if it's this year or next year, do you think he's got a legitimate shot before his college career is over of winning a Heisman? I mean, if you're going to put him in
that
category.
I think he does, but it all depends on Alabama and what Coach Saban allows him to do. If he allows him to be like Greg McElroy or what's the quarterback that went to Cincinnati, the Bengals they had at Alabama, that won two national championships.
A.J.
McCarron. If he allows him to be an A.J. McCarron or Greg McElroy, then yes, I think he will win a Heisman because he's not going to do anything to lose your game.
Those guys were never in the conversation.
Yeah.
They were never finalists.
Yeah, but he will. He's better because he's more mobile. He can do it two ways. Greg, as great as he was at Alabama, you didn't fear him running. A.J. McCarron, as great as he was at Alabama, you didn't fear him running. You fear Jalen Hurts running. And he's a load to bring down. So because he's more, I don't want to call him a dual threat quarterback, but he does have the capability of putting the ball, you know, tucking it and going. So to me, if Nick trusts him enough in the next two or three years, I think he will win a Heisman. And here's my dude right here.
The birthday boy's here, so it must be time to go.
My homeboy right here.
Speaking of Alabama, Jared and the GM will have Phil Savage a little bit later today. So they will certainly dive in hot and heavy about Alabama with Phil Savage a little bit later on their program. Tomorrow will be our final day of coverage. It will be Alabama, Missouri, Kentucky, and Texas A&M. Once again, I want to thank Pepper Boxing, Volunteer Hose and Gasket, and our transportation provided by Walker Chevrolet for all the great coverage that you've heard down here at SEC Media Days. We will be back at it tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Have a great rest of your day. We'll talk to you then.
Bailey, DJ Nashville, I love you, and happy birthday, D. Closing time.